Look at the time. Look at the time.
Look at the time. It is Hutton the Clock. Caroline Willie, D. Mays, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, and The Game Nashville app. Hutton the Clock a little bit later this week due to Mike Vrabel's press conference. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mike with Hutton and Withrow, joins us now. Hutton, appreciate you being flexible with us today, but we got a couple of doozies from Mike Vrabel's press conference. Got an F-bomb yesterday, got Easter Bunny references today. But there's been a lot of smoke about the relationship, or maybe lack thereof, between Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon. We most recently heard it from Jason Lacanfora on The Washington Post, Michael Lombardi on his podcast. Mike Vrabel was asked about it, and he essentially said, I don't normally address these things, but I want to be here, I want to fix this, and I want to win championships with Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker. Does that change at all, maybe, your perception of the relationship between Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon, and just kind of your thoughts and evaluation of what Mike Vrabel had to say in his press conference?
Well, I mean, we've heard from one side of it, right? I mean, we first and foremost, guys, Happy New Year.
Happy New
Year,
Let
me also say, it's about time that someone say something within the organization about this. Yeah. This has been going on for weeks.
And I'm glad that the question was asked in a good... Terry did a great job on that one, to give it sort of a... It wasn't like a, hey, are you going to be back? You know, it was a well-thought-out question, I thought. It's a good job. It gave him
a great
sort of a runway.
Because of the social media aspect with the players.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. It's a relevant question.
Yeah, and it's a relevant topic because it's been around the season. I mean, it's been sitting there as a discussion point week after week. And while you don't want to address every single rumor that's out there, if you're not going to address specifics about, you know, the Patriots and whether or not Vrabel is the guy that wants to be the heir to Belichick, again, all of that talk, and then you follow it up with all the stuff with Carthon, and then you have the report, then you have the story that Teron had where he sat down with both Rand and Vrabel, and now this. I mean, and there's plenty of things in between all of that. I mean, where there's smoke, there's fire, and I mean, you can avoid it by just answering the question or addressing it. You don't have to go to the podium and make a statement immediately, but I'm glad that the question was asked. I'm glad that Vrabel addressed it, and I thought it was authentic. I thought he came across believable. I mean, if you're a fan, if you're from our perspective, the media, I just perceived it to be, yeah, I want to be here. I mean, good. I mean, here we are in week 18, and this discussion has been going on for quite some time. And, you know, also, I mean, I'm not trying to just harp on Vrabel addressing it. At least he's available speaking to the media on multiple occasions throughout the season. But part of that is because he has to. Part of that is because no one else is speaking. I mean, Vrabel's the face of the franchise on a daily basis.
That is one thing that we've talked about, is Rand Carthon has been radio silent, with the exception of his sit down with TD in an article that came out about a month or so ago. I mean, he trades away Kevin Byard, a team captain and a foundational piece of this team, and he doesn't say a word to the media. I do wonder why that is. Is that a Rand Carthon decision? Is that a Mike Vrabel decision?
I thought it was just the you know, from a perspective of the relationship between Carthon and Byard. This goes back to the offseason. If you think about how Carthon was asked about trying to repair that relationship with the whole pay cut saga. And then, you know, it's Vrabel knows Byard. But again, he's the general manager. I agree with you, Caroline. It's based on the experience that we have with the general managers who have been here, good or bad, they would speak on behalf of making a move like that for a franchise-type player that meant a lot to the team and is one of the best to put on the Titans uniform.
So, don't you think, though, I as far as Rand and the perception of Rand Carthon, first year as a GM, I like his personality. I think back.
You too.
I am, you know, my background is at a radio station that was the flagship, having a week, and you remember these days, a week-long hour with Floyd Reese every Friday or whatever that was, for years, And man, did he help
didn't
himself.
You guys try to do it? Didn't you? Sorry, Willie. Didn't you try to do it with Reinfeldt? It was just boring.
He did do it. Yes, he did do it.
Okay.
He wasn't. It wasn't his. It wasn't his strong suit.
He wasn't Floyd.
He wasn't Floyd. But Rand Carthon, I think, has got that ability.
Oh, absolutely.
And I could, you know, we certainly wish he was still here to be able to ask this kind of question. But I think Floyd would tell you that if he were here, that he helped himself through a lot of hairy situations because his relationship with Jeff Fisher was hot and cold at times. They had a lot of success.
No doubt.
But they went through some tough times, right? And they stayed together through a rebuild, right? And even though at a certain point they let Floyd go, he was able to sort of reset the table for Jeff Fisher to have a couple more good teams. And so my point is that when you're in those tough times, it helps to be able to have your voice, right, and be out there. And Rand Carthon has, I'm guessing he's chosen this route, but I think he could help himself by being out front, using his personality to his advantage, getting on some shows, whatever station or outlet he chooses to use. I would think through the team you use it. But whatever you want to do, that's how you get your message out. That's how you build your narrative. That's how you, I think, build credibility with the fan base.
Well, let's spitball this for a bit. So I think in part, if I'm just trying to think through why it's radio silence for the most part, it's year one. He's never been in a situation like that. He's got a laser focus on whatever they're doing behind the scenes. And he's also within an organization that doesn't really speak up much at all unless they have to.
Yep.
From Vrabel's perspective, you can't even speak, you can't even say the word injury in the locker room if you're a player and you're asked about what's going on. So I think it's more or less the mindset of stay silent. And like we're not addressing every little thing. Well, every little thing isn't necessarily paired with big things that snowball into some perception that there is discontent within the organization. I also think, Willie, that we're hearing from the guy that has the loudest voice within the organization. It's Mike Vrabel. And I think that's also because, just comparing him, I'm listening, and you're right with Floyd and Jeff. Both of those guys had skins on the wall. Both of those guys had been within the organization.
Yes, and they did when they got to Nashville, which is definitely different than Rand, who's starting. He's starting a new
career. They arrived together. Yeah, that's way different. And I think there is a feeling out process. This is a not an arranged marriage, but it is a pairing that Amy Adams Strunk decided to go with, that Vrabel at the time told us he was being updated on the hiring process. No one believed him at the time, but I think more or less that's probably at least closer to the truth than not, based on how all of the news has been thrown out there. So again, I say news, rumors, whatever you want to tie it to, but it's about time someone stepped up and said something. And I mean, just common sense for me says the guy who said something is the guy speaking on behalf of the organization. Now, Amy Adams Strunk is the ultimate decider of this. I was stunned whenever she fired John Robinson last December. I've said it multiple times. So I always throw that in as a caveat. Who knows what's true and what's not, but we'll find out on Monday.
We got a great question last hour, and the question was, do you trust that Mike Vrabel is willing to make the tough choices and be patient, knowing that this is you're going into a new era here? Even if you brought Derrick Henry back, I would still define whatever happens starting next year as a new era for the team. The window of this past team it's closed. Byard's gone. Tannehill's going to be gone. If you bring Derrick Henry back, it's going to be for a lot less pay and probably knowing that he's going to have a different role, which I think would be difficult to pull off. But it's a rebuild. You have no choice. And Mike Vrabel, he basically has said philosophically, you don't rebuild in this league. So can he be patient if all of the pieces they need aren't out there in one off season?
Well, I think he can be patient if the plan gives him a chance in his own mind. Like, so when I just look back at this past offseason, it was very, okay, which direction are they choosing to go? Very hard to figure out when they, you know, they're doing what they did in the draft. They signed who they signed, backups, after firing Robinson because the backups weren't good enough and the depth was not good enough. And then they move forward and all of a sudden DeAndre Hopkins is here. Again, to me, there's a in all of this, all of the discussion about, are they going to trade Tannehill? Are they trying to trade Henry? You know, it was out there that they were talking about that. So, and then they're both back, but they draft Levis. I mean, it was a lot of mixed signals. And I think the locker room picked up on that. How could you not? I mean, if they're going to pick up on the rumors about the relationship between Rand and Vrabel, absolutely they'd pick up on what's going on with their guys and who they're tight with. So I think that all plays a factor. And I think they have to lay their plan out much better than what they did a year ago. There was a lot of confusion just from a discussion of, okay, here's what we think they're doing. I think it was very hard to describe. And if you can't lay it out, I think that's where the frustration mounts. And Vrabel has every right to be frustrated if he thought the plan was going one way and it went the other way. But when you bring in the new general manager and you hear what Amy Adams Strunk said about how they did things in San Francisco and what he was brought there to do is build the depth back, they need to lay that out in a fair way to the fans and speak on behalf of where they're headed instead of what they're doing currently, because what they're doing currently is just stuck in it. They're just stuck in the mud. And I think that's where the frustration comes out in the losing and what we saw Vrabel say this week.
They're in football purgatory. And I'm with you, Hutt. I think that you need to be, Jonathan Hutt is with us, I think you need to be open and honest about what the expectations are. Because bringing back Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry, Kevin Byard, the message was, we want to make the playoffs. We want to be competitive. Yeah. But after Sunday's game, you know, Monday, we'll probably have a Mike Vrabel press conference. We'll have an end-of-season press conference at some point. Do you believe that both Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel will be in their respective positions in 2024?
I mean, based on the way Vrabel came across today, yes. I don't think you're bringing in Rand Carthon to fire him a year in. I don't think you're firing Mike Vrabel if he's going to stand at the podium and say what he said today. Mm-hmm. And I'll also say, just going back to the patience thing, like, of course he's going to have some patience. Where's he going to go where he doesn't have to have patience and they're going to win immediately? Like at the Chargers, but I think Harbaugh is going to end up there.
Not New England, not Atlanta.
Not at New England, not at Atlanta, not Chicago. Like all of these teams are Washington. They're going to have a ton of cap space, just like the Titans, and they're going to be in the quarterback market, and it doesn't seem like the Titans are going to do that. So, I mean, again, what's the plan, and is everyone on board, and can everyone describe what they're doing? And really, it's if Vrabel doesn't want to describe anything, but at least lay it out from a final presser type of way where you get to see what their vision is instead of why the vision of the past got them to where they are.
Do you think they both should be in their respective positions in 2024?
Yes. I mean, I am. It's tough to evaluate Rand Carthon right now. Again, we don't even hear from the guy. Yeah. It's tough to evaluate him. Mike Vrabel, I believe, is a really good head coach. We've seen results whenever he's been the head coach of this team in the past. And he's been the coach of the year. And he received credit for doing more with less. He also gets the fault of doing less with that same type of scenario in many cases. But they were also bad in week one. I mean, I don't grade on a curve based on how things end when the season has been like this since New Orleans and they decided to throw the football 40 times. So, yeah, I mean, this is a bump. This is a hill. They have to lay out the solutions as they perceive them to be. They don't have to tell us who they're picking or who they're going to sign or who they're getting rid of, but we all know what they have to do, and they haven't been able to do it. They have not solved the offensive line. John Robinson was fired for it. And if they don't solve the offensive line issues again, Caroline, Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon will be fired for it.
Okay, that's a really good question. I threw this out, a theoretical question. Hutt, you tell me. If they had gotten, let's just say, average offensive line play, define that however you want, would they be 8-8 trying to get into the playoffs this weekend? Like average offensive line play, I would have to say this is the worst offensive line they've had since the Ken Wisenhunt
since
pick up the pieces kind of thing. Yeah.
This might be the worst offensive line I've ever seen.
Left tackle. Yeah.
I mean, 2014 was pretty, pretty bad. They were bad.
What'd you say?
That, 2015, that line up in those, like the Zach Mettenberger, that was bad. I mean, that was 1-15, 2-14 kind of stuff.
Willie,
like,
standing on the sidelines in Houston, they put Will Zvitek one-on-one with J.J. Watt.
That was an absolute nightmare.
What about Andre Dillard one-on-one with Miles Garrett?
Andre Dillard would have been better than that. J.J. Watt, I think Zach Mettenberger will need therapy the rest of his life for some of those games. J.J. Watt just absolutely destroyed them.
I believe it.
Yes.
It was bad. So, okay,
Willie,
so let's get back to the
question again.
Would they have?
Would they have been
8-8 and a chance to play the Jaguars to get into the playoffs? Like, look at the Bucs. The Bucs aren't that great. All they have to do is beat the Panthers. They're going to be in the playoffs the year after Tom Brady retires.
So my answer,
they're not that good.
My answer to that is yes, they would be a 7-8 win team in this bad division. Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
But here's why.
The follow up is they would still have to rebuild after, even if that happened. But so I guess
I would
if you
hope
focus
they would
on
that,
the offensive
yes,
line, if you can just get an offensive line, you could have the makings of a competitive team.
Well, look at the numbers when a quarterback takes a sack on a drive and how often that results into it's more or less it results in the feel of a turnover in many cases, because you're especially with this team, as much as Vrabel talks about not wanting to have a down that produces pass only, downfield passing, this team's punting immediately. So I think if you cut down on the number of times your quarterback's getting sacked and hit, yeah, I think this team has a great chance of, in the one score games that they've been in that Vrabel pointed out last week, I mean, yeah, I think they can absolutely, with one of the best players on their team, Nick Folk, be in a winning column more often than what we saw so far. But do I think they're doing anything more than what any of these teams will do from the division? No. I mean, on the bright side of all of this, maybe the what happened forced them to realize what they were doing instead of just towing the line once again, which is what 8 wins would have done.
Jonathan Hutton is with us.
Can I give one theory to you?
Please.
Is Belichick going to be a general manager somewhere?
Oh, I don't think so.
Okay. Everyone wants to pair Vrabel with Belichick, and I was just throwing that out there. It doesn't necessarily be in New England.
That sounds like a nightmare.
Well, I don't disagree. I'm not saying that it's something that's in the works. I'm just like, I'm thinking like, why is everything in New England about Vrabel? And I think it's clear about who talks about him up there, and it's all of them. It's the Krafts and it's Belichick. And yeah, I think they used one of Belichick's favorite players as a little rumor bait against him this year. I think all of that is gamesmanship between the Krafts and Belichick. I really do, especially Jonathan Kraft.
I don't disagree. I don't think that it's a coincidence that there are a lot of things coming out about Mike Vrabel out of New England, whether it's Greg Bedard or Ben Volen of the Boston Globe, even Michael Lombardi on his podcast.
So
he's got New England ties.
The theory from New England insiders is that Belichick and Kraft are going to have a parting of ways, and that Belichick will agree not to go somewhere and coach, and that Kraft will agree to not have him, not fire him, and he's going to get paid or whatever. But coach and general manager are two different things. That's the only reason I bring it up, because no one's throwing that idea out there, and it's Bill Belichick. I certainly think there are organizations that could use his name to help out the overall brand. I'm looking at the Washington Commanders. But again, if you're going back to the question about Carthon, if he's not here, it's either Mike Vrabel is the head coach and general manager, which some would argue that's the case. I don't. But I do think Vrabel has a lot of power, and he has the deciding vote in many cases. Or it's going to be someone that has a lot more to the table than a first-time general manager, quote-unquote. I'm just, again, a lot of things have to be going on behind the scenes right now and like 6 or 7, 8 weeks ago for all of this to play out next week the way everyone perceives it to be when everything is like a duck on the pond with what's going on underneath the surface. I don't know if it's that dire of a situation, especially given the fact that finally, Mike Vrabel said something about it because he was asked about it.
I cannot believe that it is January 3rd, 2024, and we have been talking about the future of this organization, the relationship between Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon, and we are just now getting at least a question asked, at least getting Mike Vrabel on the record saying something about it. But last one from me, Hutt. Chad Forbes, which is, I saw it on Twitter, and I honestly did not know if Chad Forbes had any skins on the wall whatsoever. I listened to Paul Kaharsky on with Robbie and Joe this morning. He said that he's dialed into a lot of agents. And
it's the agent game for him, yeah.
Yeah, that he always has a lot of
NFL tips. He tips a lot of picks on draft night.
Draft night tidbits.
Yes.
So he tweeted, the fact is that Mike Vrabel has proven himself enough in the league to dictate the organizational structure. He'd get complete Sean Payton-like control from multiple organizations if available. Contract status is a bit cloudy, but a power play is underway. Mike wants out of Tennessee. Now, if his sources are agents, do you think this is coming from Mike Vrabel's agents? Do you think this has any sort of validity?
Well, if he wants more power, this is the way to play it. But here's the problem with all of that. He's got to be traded to that team.
Mm-hmm.
He's under contract. He's the head coach of the Tennessee Titans. And if Amy Adams Strunk doesn't want to fire him, then he has no control over where he's going to end up next, unless they've got a trade partner that's set up just perfectly with a great offer that, you know, they can't turn down. So, no, is there validity to it? Chad Forbes sent it out, and then all of a sudden Jason Lockenfora, in typical fashion, acted like he had it. So, who knows? If it's not from Schefter, I'll take that back. If it's not from Ian Rappaport or Diana Russini,
mm-hmm.
I'm not really sure what to hold there other than you're correct. Chad and Paul's right. We've talked about this on our show locally before. Like, Chad Forbes is really good and dialed into the agents. He's dialed into the draft and what goes on draft night and who's picking who way before you get anything announced. Beyond that, I mean, I don't see him breaking news very much on NFL coaching vacancies or what's going on in season behind the scenes. And that's very random considering, again, Russini gets everything.
Mm-hmm.
And all of a sudden, Chad Forbes gets this in Week 18.
Yeah. Interesting. Interesting how there have all of a sudden been so many national pundits that have something along those lines.
No one is reporting the opposite, though, in all of this. So, again, this is why you have to address stuff like this,
right?
Because no one is reporting the opposite, because and no one in Nashville from the media perspective that I know of, Willie, Caroline, you correct me if I'm wrong, thinks that it's actually is putting things out there like this that's coming from the New England area or just the national perception. So I'm glad
that doesn't even address the practicality of actually trading
goes down.
Yeah.
Right.
If you want Mike Vrabel, you have to trade for Mike Vrabel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This isn't a Sean Payton situation where he's sitting out a year, right? Like it's not that far down the path, especially after we finally heard from him. And again, he could have said anything. If he says nothing, then it adds more fuel to the fire. So based on what he said and his tone and how he came across, I thought he was telling the truth.
I'm with you. When he said, I want to be here, I believed him. Jonathan Hutton, Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow. Hutton, appreciate you for joining us. Appreciate you being flexible today. Happy New Year. We'll be listening to you and Chad Withrow on Hot Mic with Hutton and Withrow.
Yeah, looking forward to it. Chad is back from Nebraska, his annual trek. So he's bundled up
because he's defrosted.
Still cold from Omaha.
Maybe cold, Mike, today.
Yes, yes. Appreciate it, guys. Happy New Year.
Appreciate it. Have a good one. We'll chat next week. Jonathan Hutton, he is the very best. We'll react to what Jonathan Hutton had to say there. Caroline Willie D. Mace is brought to you by Zen Sports. Start earning cash rewards on your bets today. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-889-9789. Terms and conditions apply. Must be 21 or older and in Tennessee to bet. Caroline Willie D. Mace, we are broadcasting from the Spring Hill Heating and Cooling Game Nashville Studios, keeping your home feeling comfortable all year round. Visit springhillac.com. Plus, you can join Jared Stillman, Chris Sanders, and Derek Mason at Teddy's Tavern this Sunday from 9:30 to 11:30 a.m. for our NFL pregame show. They'll break down the Titans' Week 18 matchup against the Jags and give you the latest updates before the game. Our NFL pregame show is presented by Parman Tractor and Equipment and Beast Unleashed. Appreciate Jonathan Hutton for joining us in the last segment. The big news of the day is what Mike Vrabel ended his press conference saying. Terry McCormick asked him the question, look, there's a lot of buzz about the relationship between you and Rand Carthon on social media. Do you address that with the team? Mike Vrabel said, look, I want to be here. I want to be here next year. I want to fix this. I want to win championships with Rand Carthon and Chad Brinker. And look, if you don't believe him, that's fine. I do believe him when he says that he wants to be back next year. I think we'll get more clarity after the Jags game on Sunday of what the future of this organization looks like. But I want to get your thoughts on that, your belief in Mike Vrabel and Rand Carthon moving forward. Caleb and Gallatin text in. Phone lines driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025 is our phone number if you have a thought. Caleb and Gallatin says, if Vrabel really wants to be here as long as it takes to win a Super Bowl, then he needs to have one hell of a season next year to get a new contract. Because if we start a rebuild after the season, I'm not sure he will be able to build it up to a Super Bowl contender with just the 2 years left. After this year, I can't imagine Amy is gushing to give him a new one.
Good point. I do think that at the end, when you have 2 years left on the contract, that's different from having 1 year left on the contract. Yeah. So at the end of next year, I think you're probably addressing the contract one way or the other with Vrabel.
I think you have to.
So the direction that they're going at the end of next year, presumably if Vrabel's coach next year, will be important.
And that's another thing to keep in mind because Caleb texts in about Super Bowl contender. Now, I think we need to be careful with that. It's not just Super Bowl or bust. It's about the direction.
Yeah. Are you on your way to being a Super Bowl contender?
If you go 5-12 again next year.
It's not going to happen next year.
No.
They're not going to contend for the Super Bowl next year.
No. And if you do, great. Wonderful. Yeah. Then extend Mike Vrabel.
Prove me wrong. That's great, but it's not realistic.
As long as this team does not regress even further, and my goodness, I'm not going to say that they can't regress even further because I said that about the offensive line last year, and look where we are now.
Watch the films of the Ken Wisenhunt team. Ooh. That it can be worse. It can be a lot worse.
Which is terrifying to think about. But as long as this team is heading in the right direction, what does that look like in the win-loss column? I don't know. You can't afford to go 5-12 again next year. I don't think that you can afford to have another losing season next year. But as long as the team looks better, the offensive line is better, you see that you're going in the right direction. What does that look like? I don't know. This year? You went in the wrong direction. We know what that looks like. As long as you are heading toward a better direction, that you can see the gears turning, that you can see Super Bowl potential, or at least playoffs. Let's get back to the playoffs first, and then we'll have that conversation. You can get better in an offseason. Can you go from 5-12 to Super Bowl contender in an offseason? I don't know. Maybe. Sure, crazy things happen in the NFL. That's not my expectation. Get better, and then we can talk about it. Another texter texts in, says the Titans just need to fire everybody and hire Jared Stillman as GM and head
yes.
coach.
We'll now
win Super
we're
Bowl
talking.
In 2 years. I'm sure Jared would like that.
Is this one of his burner accounts again?
2 years.
I think Jared would like that.
Okay. He's got opinions.
Yep. You got opinions. Terry in Illinois texts in, says Derrick Henry is not coming back. He would be crazy to jeopardize his Hall of Fame candidacy and come back to run behind this line or patchwork rebuild line. He's going to sign with Dallas, and you'll see him in the Super Bowl. Because Dallas has such a rich recent history in the Super Bowl.
It has been a while for Dallas. But I do think it is going to be a big story this offseason, just like it is for any running back, but this isn't just any running back. This is Derrick Henry that we're talking about. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just strictly from an individual standpoint, Derrick Henry probably is sitting there going, okay, what gives me the best chance to end my career with a couple more productive seasons to where they would solidify my candidacy for the Hall of Fame? He's probably not there today, I don't think. He's never been to a Super Bowl. You know, he's had great years, but does he have enough? He's not like up there in the Frank Gore, Walter Payton,
like
Emmitt Smith, getting up there where like the longevity has you at a yard production. We're like, wow, you can't ignore this guy.
Right.
I think he's not quite there. So look at Dalvin Cook, right? At 3 o'clock or 2 o'clock, whatever it is, Dalvin Cook is either going to be claimed by somebody on waivers or he's going to be looking for anybody to pick him up. He's a pretty good player.
Yeah.
And he was supposedly a versatile guy. Now, he went to the Jets. That whole season went down the tubes the first game. But well,
Cleveland.
But that was a whole thing back over the. Yeah, the Vikings could have kept Dalvin Cook. They didn't. They moved on from him. This happens to running backs in that age category of 28 to 30. So Derrick Henry's even more unique in that he's got to be. He's not a receiving third down back, right? Not a role player necessarily. So what other teams would be interested in at what price? It's a complicated equation.
And what does Derrick Henry's role look like on, let's use this example, the Cowboys? I don't think that there is another team in the National Football League that would use Derrick Henry the way that the Titans use Derrick Henry. So let's say Derrick Henry goes to the team that wins the Super Bowl next year. Well, what's his role on that team?
And let's say he wants to stay with the Titans for that reason. I don't think they can do it that way anymore. They're going to have another season where they're averaging about the same.
I don't think he's going to get 30 touches a game.
He's not at that stage of his career, and the offense has to evolve. It's got to be better. It can't be the same as it's been the last couple of years. They got to find a way to make a jump.
Right.
And giving it to him 300 times, and I don't think he's going to have 300 carries this year. He's been steady, but it's a limiting. The offense has been limited. It's not just because the offensive line is bad.
It's a big part of it.
He's down a notch. It's not a diss at all to say he's down a notch.
He's
still
not a 2,000-yard back anymore. Steven from Hendersonville, Texas, says, I have zero faith in Ran and Mike to rebuild this team to a championship-caliber team. That group replaced four starters on the O-line, and it's worse. I'm to the point in my fandom now that I root for chaos and anarchy. I just want to watch the world burn. I think that's a really scary place that Amy Adams Strunk doesn't want this fan base to be in, where it's just, look, I don't even care. At this point, I don't care what happens to this team. I think there's a big portion of the fan base that doesn't trust Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel to rebuild this team. And frankly, I don't know how much I trust Rand Carthon and Mike Vrabel to rebuild this team because they didn't do much to help this team. In fact, I feel like this team is worse now than it was last year.
I have seen teams change quick. To me, the offensive line, even if they didn't get a lick better anywhere else, if they could find a way to make the offensive line better, that would go a long way in the quote-unquote direction. And I don't think you got to replace five guys. There's a domino effect, right? You need some anchor that makes everybody else better. That's hard to find, but that's what they have to look for.
And then all
of a sudden, like if Nicholas Petit-Frere doesn't have to be the starter. Like maybe he gets better, but maybe at least he's a better backup than Dylan Raidens is. Maybe Jaden Duncan is not a starting tackle, but he's a decent backup tackle. These are all small gains, right? To where if you could just have small gains like that, and then you find that anchor, and that makes Skoronski better. You know, see what I'm saying? It doesn't mean you have to blow everything up, send everybody out and bring in 10 new guys. That's not going to happen. There's not enough good linemen out there. Mm-hmm. But one or two guys who have an effect on the rest of the line could go a long way.
A positive effect. Because I think there's two or three guys that have a
negative They've
effect
had an effect on everybody else,
on
and
the
it's not a good effect.
Line. Not a good one.
Okay, good point.
And what they can't do is hope that you have enough guys in place and hope that Nicholas Petit-Frere can be your starting right tackle. Or hope that Andre Dillard turns into a starting left tackle. You can't do that anymore. You tried that experiment,
Dillard,
and it didn't
Dillard
work.
Cannot be back on this team.
Aaron Brewer, you can't just hope that he can be your starting center. You tried that experiment.
But
it doesn't work.
But Aaron Brewer has proven to be, and I don't know what they're going to do because his contract is different. They've paid him like a starter now. But he was a good fill-in guy who helped the depth, right? If your depth is Aaron Brewer, that's a better place to be in. And I don't know if you can fix all of this overnight, but again, one or two anchors. Let's just start with one. Maybe it's wishful thinking to get two, but one good draft pick, one good free agent. Mm-hmm. Then all of a sudden you have something you could work with.
Because if you had one good draft pick and one good free agent on this offensive line, how different could the season have been?
Yeah, well, let's look at
the difference between two or three games.
There have been about five games where the offensive line has given them no chance of winning, and last Sunday was one of them. Mm-hmm. Right, the Cleveland game in Cleveland early in the year, that was one of them.
Yep.
The two games down in Florida against the Bucs and the game against the Jaguars. Mm-hmm. Those games were write-offs. Offensive line paralyzed them. No chance. But there's also five games or so this year where the game is right there hanging in the balance that despite the offensive line, they still are right there. The two games they lost in overtime here.
New Orleans.
Seattle. New Orleans the very first week of the season.
Indianapolis.
I didn't even count that one, so that would be six. I'm thinking about the Steelers game, too, where you're throwing the ball into the end zone that you could win it on the last play. So you're not
half those
that
games?
Far. You're not that far from at least competitive mediocrity.
Mm-hmm. One Mike checks in with an interesting thought, because we've been kind of comparing the Predators and the Titans, how each of those front offices and coaching staffs have approached these seasons where you're not a championship contending team, but you want to win games. Mike Texan says, we've gone to many Preds games this year because it's exciting and we feel confident in the new direction of the team. Plus, Breakstone is nice and the organization does a fantastic job with the arena. I have very little faith in the Titans organization and going to the stadium is boring. We've been season ticket holders since day one and our names are on the founder's wall. It's sad, but there is something fundamentally wrong with the Titans. I do think just the change in perspective, the complete open and honesty about where the Predators are at have refreshed the Predators fan base. That this feels like a much different Preds fan base now than it did maybe this time last year. And it's because there was honesty and transparency. Like, look, you got to be patient with us. We want to try to win games. We don't know how many games we can win. With the Titans, it just feels like it's constantly trying the same thing over and over again and getting worse and worse results. And the fan base is tired of it.
It's an interesting question to bring up because I do feel that. I am, when I go to Bridgestone Arena, there is a good, fun energy. The crowd has been fantastic despite a lower expectation level. But this would be, I think, the point that Jared would make. If I'm reading him, listening to his sort of take on where the Titans are, it's a little easier to sell if you're the Predators because they have a fresh start. They have a new GM and they have a new coach. That's an easier sell of it's going to be different. Give us some time but I do think you can thread the needle if you're the Titans. You can still say we have a young general manager in his second year and we have an excellent coach and this is a new era and we have to rebuild. This is the window. The Ryan Tannehill, Derrick Henry era is over. The Kevin Byard era, that great window. We had some fun. We won some division championships. We almost got to a Super Bowl, etc. But we're moving on from that. This is a new era. I think you can sell that with the same guys. Jared would probably disagree. And I think that was where he was coming from yesterday. Mm-hmm. Much easier. The other thing that the Predators have is they have a developing minor league system. Where they can say, hey, we've got some guys in the hopper already. We just drafted a bunch more guys. We have a minor league team we've been watching. We got some young guys we think are going to be good in a couple of years. Tough to do that in the NFL. You have no minor league system.
Right.
They have a limited number. Now, they can sell that this rookie class that Rand Carthon drafted, not bad. You might have a quarterback out of that class. I think you've got an offensive lineman in Skoronski that's going to be pretty good.
Yeah.
I don't know how great he'll be, but I think he's good.
Tajay Spears looks promising.
Tajay Spears, I think, is a very intriguing player. So you see what I'm saying? Like, even Wiley, before he got the concussion, I thought was, okay, mm-hmm. You might have a player here. But you don't have a minor league system where you're saying, we've developed a really good nucleus of players. So that's a hard thing to do. But I do think your messaging is important.
I don't know how much the fans care about the minor league system, honestly. I think that it's something it's exciting.
I think the Predator fans who were really howling about where it was before, I do think those fans are paying attention to what's happening in Milwaukee for sure.
And it is the messaging. It's the expectations. And it comes from the top. That if you sell this dream and this hope of winning a championship, when the fans can see that clearly in front of them that it's not there, that's incredibly frustrating, especially when the fans see that, hey, look, we were right. We knew this wasn't a championship contending team. We want to just go ahead and go in a different direction. That hearing it from the top at least provides a refreshed perspective. But let's continue that conversation coming up next. Predators get the win over the Blackhawks last night, 3-0. And Willie, you brought up something on Twitter, the Bruno effect. And I want to get into that coming up next. Caroline Willie D. Mace, Tune in to 94.9 The Fan tomorrow night for Vanderbilt women's basketball. The Commodores will be on the road taking on Mississippi State. Tip-off is at 6:30 p.m. and pregame begins at 6:15 p.m. Coverage is also available on the 94.9 The Fan app and at 94.9thefan.com.
Forsberg gets it back. Here is Yossi, right side. Given down low. Now across for Riley scores! The Predators take a 2-0 lead, and they still have plenty of power play time remaining.
The Predators get the win over the Chicago Blackhawks last night, 3-0. The Preds are now 3-0 in their three games against the Chicago Blackhawks. But, Willie, I kind of wanted to look into one thing that you tweeted, breaking down the numbers of the top line between Forsberg, Ryan O'Reilly, and Gus Nyquist, but more so the Bruno effect, the Andrew Brunette effect. One thing I was really excited about whenever the Predators hired Andrew Brunette was his hockey philosophy. Up-tempo, if we have the puck, keep the puck. If we don't have the puck, we want to get after the puck. Much more of an attacking style of offense. I didn't know how it was going to work. I didn't know how it was going to look. I didn't know how long or how short of an amount of time it would take for that philosophy to kind of take place with this Predators team, but I was intrigued. But kind of what your point about the Bruno effect was is how it's coming to fruition offensively for the Predators.
Yeah, and we used on our broadcast last night the performance of the top line, which is really a big reason why they're sitting there in wild card number one right now at 21-16-1. So you're getting closer to the halfway point of the season. But Ryan O'Reilly, now with 2 points last night, you just heard Pete's call of a big goal that kind of sealed the game last night. They were, I give the Blackhawks credit. They got injuries on top of injuries, and they weren't
they're
very good to begin with.
It.
Yeah, they're going through it. And yet, they're still hanging around. It's 1-0, and you're looking around going, there's no way this game should be 1-0 right now. So you're like, one bad bounce, and all of a sudden you got a tie game. O'Reilly put it away. O'Reilly now with 2 points last night, and Nyquist getting a goal last night. They now have more points this year after 38 games than they had all of last year. Now, last year they both had some injuries, but they both played over 50 games last year. And they both have more points than they had last year. Philip Forsberg, we've talked about him a lot this year. He's on pace to have something like 88 or 89 points today. Now, that can change as he rises and falls. But the Predators have never had anybody get 90 points as a forward, right? Yossi almost had 100 a couple years ago when he won the Norris. Or finished second in the Norris. Oh, that's still a sore spot for me. But the way that Brunette plays, I think, really is a good fit for players who have offensive minds. And there's a great article that Sean Shapiro wrote that I know Nick read of how Andrew Brunette thinks that there is a little risk involved in their game, and he has spent a lot of time with this group saying, look, I know it's different, right? But trust me. If we all play it, if we all buy into it, we're going to see some results. And I think there's small gains being made with how the team plays, and that's meaning potential really good things, I think, for the way they play. And he gives Barry Trotz a lot of credit because he goes, Barry Trotz doesn't have the same philosophy, or didn't when he was a head coach. He would probably be thinking this is a little too much risk in this game, but he says, you know, Barry Trotz has given me the runway to play this way. And I think that's how I would define the Bruno effect.
And I think Predators fans are loving it. Like you said,
it's more fun to watch. It's more fun to watch.
Bridgestone Arena, even with a team that might make the playoffs, might not make the playoffs, that had very few expectations just because there were more questions than I think there were expectations. Bridgestone Arena's packed out, had an engagement at Bridgestone Arena last night.
Yeah, with Jelly Roll on hand. That was
Jelly Roll on hand.
Will Levis was there.
The proposal, that was cool.
Yeah, that was great. But I think what we're also seeing is the risk, the offensive-minded game, mm-hmm. is also meaning better defense as a team. They're not giving up as many good chances because they do have the puck more than they had in the past couple years.
That is for certain, and that is clear to see. That's going to do it for us today. We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. Stillman & Company's up next.